All I require is to sit in the sun, read my book, alone.
What's the matter? Don't you like books?
Books, young man. Books, thousands of them. If time wasn't so important, I'd show you something. My library. Thousands of books.
Well, welcome to episode 3 of the Trek Book Club podcast with me, Rob Chapman, and my co-host, Rick.
Hello.
And so just to give you a quick reminder of what the Trek Book Club podcast is and it's all about. So yeah, the Trek Book Club podcast is it's a monthly podcast all about Star Trek books and the Star Trek books we're reading as part of our Trek Club, which you can find and join in with on Twitter by following the Twitter handle at Trek Book Club or by following hashtag Trek Book Club. So for our first two Trek Book Club sessions we had on Twitter, we read DS9 Avatar series, so book one, book two. And so our last episode of the podcast, we discussed the conclusion to that, which was book two of DS9 Avatar. So for our third Trek Book Club session on Twitter, which took place at the end of October 2018, we're a little bit behind.
A little bit.
So I put it this time because I chose which books we were going to read for the first two Trek Book Club sessions. This time I put it to a vote on Twitter as to which book we would read. And I gave people four options. And the options were Star Trek Discovery, Desperate Hours, Star Trek Voyager, Homecoming, Star Trek TNG, Q Squared, and Star Trek Enterprise, A Choice of Futures. And in reverse order, with quite an impressive 74 votes cast, there was Enterprise, A Choice of Futures got 5% of the vote. Voyager Homecoming got 12% of the vote, mm-hmm. which as a Voyager fan, I was a little bit disappointed with, but there you go. TNG Q Squared got 15% of the vote. And with a whopping 68% of the vote, Star Trek Discovery Desperate Hours won, which, the Trek Book Clubbers overwhelmingly voted to see, to read Star Trek Discovery Desperate Hours.
That is very definitive, yeah.
It is. It's a big... The next closest one was TNG Q Squared with 15%. There's a huge gap.
Yeah,
but I think that might have something to do with the fact that Discovery was released in September.
You were, yeah.
So maybe people were obviously wanting to get as much Discovery as they could lay their hands on.
I'll be honest, I did vote for Discovery on that one, so...
I think I didn't. I think I was one of the 12% that voted for Voyager Homecoming, but I'm a bit biased. But I'm glad we did read Discovery, and it was a good time to read it with the series coming out.
Absolutely. Well, yes. Yeah, definitely. So I think normally we start with a recap of the book.
Yes, we do.
Excellent. Right. As always, I'm reading it from Memory Beta. So it was a bit of a shorter one than the Avatar synopsis, but we'll go through, be a bit quicker. So. Right.
Excellent.
Okay, so Desperate Hours. With the Shenzhou's first and second officers being promoted to another ship, Lieutenant Michael Burnham is made acting first officer ahead of Science Officer Saru, who will serve as acting second officer. It is up to Captain Georgiou whether or not she will retain the position. The Shenzhou then receives a distress call from the colony on Sursa 3. Drilling operations have disturbed an ancient alien spaceship dubbed the Juggernaut, which has dispatched probes to attack the colony. The Shenzhou hurries to assist them, but Starfleet also dispatches the Enterprise with orders to destroy the Juggernaut, even though doing so will destroy the colony. Burnham proposes she and Spock enter the Juggernaut to try and find a way of disabling it. Meanwhile, Saru discovers the colony leaders hid evidence of an extinct civilization that once inhabited the planet. They will face charges if everyone survives. Burnham and Spock pass a number of challenges, at one point having to mind meld in order to remain in contact during one test. The Juggernaut's computer announces that by passing the test, they've proved themselves worthy to join the long-extinct Turanian Empire. Those who refuse the offer or fail the tests are wiped out as the planet's original inhabitants were. Burnham accepts the offer, but the Juggernaut continues to attack the Enterprise and the Shenzhou, deeming them aggressors. The two ships manage to damage the Juggernaut enough for Spock and Burnham to overload their phasers by key systems and disable it. The colony will be evacuated pending an archaeological examination, although some may be allowed to return later. Georgiou confirms Burnham is first officer with a promotion to lieutenant commander. So, yeah, I think that synopsis skips over quite a lot of the detail, in all honesty.
Very, very general.
Especially compared to Avatar, was very, very lengthy. It was quite a long, long summary. But that's not a bad thing.
I suppose, though, it is memory beta. It's entirely made by fan contributions.
Yeah.
If I don't like it, I need to get my bum online and write my own synopsis, don't I? So,
and I suppose it's a relatively new book, as where Avatar's been out for quite a while.
Absolutely,
more people have read Avatar, yes. So there's, you know, more input on the summaries on memory beta.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, what did we think of Desperate Hours?
Well, I was going to, before we get into the I was going to say, before the plots and the characters and discuss that, I was going to ask you what you thought of the front cover. Judging a book by its cover.
Absolutely. No, see, it's a little bit generic. It's essentially, it's a publicity still of Michael Burnham. So there's not a great clue to it.
No, it's not like, it's quite in contrast to the Avatar books that we read, where they gave quite, you know, there were lots of clues as to who was in the book, who was involved. There was a picture of an orb, so it told you a bit about the plot.
They pack a lot of characters in there that are relevant to the story on Avatar.
Yeah, as well, like you said, this is just a publicity shot. It's just Burnham. It's nothing, you know, she's not doing anything particularly interesting or revealing. She's just there.
I personally would have gone with something like, I'd have liked, say, Burnham and Giorgio, but then with Spock and Pike.
Yeah.
Because I think one of the key things in this book is that the Shenzhou and the Enterprise team up. And I think that's a fantastic, you know, it's going to get a lot of people in.
Yeah.
I thought that would have been a surefire selling point. But
especially with that, yeah, again, keep going back to Avatar, but with Avatar, you know, they brought in TNG with the DS9 crew, and, you know, they had a picture of Picard, and that would, you know, drawing both the fans from both of those series. You thought, yeah, you'd think maybe they might have put that on to try and attract more readers.
I'm a little surprised they didn't make more of that on the cover, but
I guess maybe they thought the fact that it's just got Discovery on there would pull in enough people.
Well, yeah, I guess so. It's obviously going to be the big thing with the launch. So
it's a fairly plain, generic front cover. Doesn't really tell you much.
No.
Going on to the book itself. what's your general opinions of it?
In a nutshell, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. It was a reasonably good, interesting adventure. But I think probably the big point for me was, well, there's two big things for me. One is it serves as an interesting prequel.
Yeah.
Because it's obviously takes place a little bit before the series begins. And this is kind of how does Burnham get the first officer position?
Mm.
And it also sets up a lot of this sort of antagonistic relationship she has with Saru at the beginning of the series.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of fun. It also gives us a bit more of the relationship between her and Philippa Giorgio, which is definitely one of my favourite elements of the first two episodes.
Yeah,
But then my other big selling point is the Enterprise is in it. We've got Captain Pike, and we've got Spock. We have the Spock Burnham team up that everyone's like wondering if we'll ever see in the series.
And we get it in the first Discovery book.
Yeah, and it was very, very interesting. It's quite interesting because it's released at a point where we didn't get a huge amount of that backstory. I think, is this out before the episode where Sarek's injured and we discover that what basically he deliberately favoured Spock's career prospects over Michael's?
I think it might have been, is it Lethe? Is that the one?
That's the one.
I think we read it just after that episode, but whether it probably, I don't know, I think it had been released for a short while before that. But
I know the author had access to a lot of the scripts, so he was able to write this with a bit of foreknowledge. So he definitely was. I think it's very likely he wrote that for knowing well the revelations in Lethe. So yeah, it's an interesting dynamic because it kind of fascinates me. I don't have any issue with this like foster sister of Spock's. I think it's a great idea. It ties things together, and I'm loving what it's done after 50 years to take a whole new twist on Sarek's character. But the dynamic in Sarek's very dysfunctional family now fascinates me more than ever. So it was very interesting in this book to have Burnham and Spock team up in that way.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if there's going to be any tension between them now that, you know, well, I suppose without, hopefully the people that are listening to this have watched Discovery. Spoiler alert, if you haven't, turn off now, then come back. The fact that, you know, we know before Discovery, you know, we know Spock and Sarek have this really tense relationship, and we never really fully understand why. And the episode, the Discovery episodes, there's a big reveal as to why that is, and we finally learn, and it's something like, right, now it makes sense.
It pulls that whole antagonism between them into a whole different level. Yeah. My feeling is at this point in the book, at this point in their lives where the book story takes place, neither of them know what Sarek did.
That's
whether
right.
Spock does, okay, it's a little in the air, but my impression has always been he doesn't know. He doesn't really get why his father's so mad at him about it, because his father's not going to admit to having had that emotional lapse where he favoured Spock's career over over Michael's.
And because at this point in the book, Michael hasn't learnt from that with Sarek, so she doesn't know that yet. So I was about to say that the fact that in the book Burnham and Spock mind meld, that they would know from that, but yeah, she doesn't know yet, so he can't go. So
I mean, it must be extremely confusing. It's like, why are you so mad at Spock for having a career in Starfleet? But you kind of recommended me into Starfleet, and you're not mad at me for being in Starfleet. You always pick up the phone in one ring when I call, as I think we see in the Vulcan Hello. She makes a communication Sarek, just answers a call within like seconds. It's like, it's a busy ambassador. Is he waiting by the phone? It must have been very confusing for them why it was okay for one but not the other. But
definitely. I wonder if that fuels even more, not I was going to say hatred, but not hatred, but yeah, and the antagonism between the fact that Burnham and Spock meld in this. I wonder if that fuels the antagonism even further down the line.
Yes, because I think Spock's reasonable and rational enough he wouldn't blame Burnham per se, because he'd see it was his father's behaviour that's weird and not logical.
I really like the different strands to the plot. There's almost like several different stories going on at once. So you've got the Cersa III story and the Juggernaut and its drones attacking the colony and the governor there. You've got almost like the Enterprise and the Shenzo going on with initially. There's some confrontation between Pike and Georgiou, and then eventually they come together. You've got the story with Spock and Burnham trying to find a way to do the Juggernaut.
Yeah.
You've got, there's like a mini plot with Saru and is it Commander Una? The commander of, is it Commander, I think, of the Enterprise? Yeah.
Yes. Well, she's first officer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I quite like, so there's quite a lot of things going on in this story. Quite a lot of plots to follow, and they were all really, really interesting.
Yeah, it's quite weird. It's quite interesting the way Mac has teamed people up into pairs. Almost, you've got Burnham and Spock. You've got Saru and Number One.
Yeah,
you've essentially got Georgiou and Pike, and their little conflict over Starfleet's orders. So, it's kind of an interesting way they've sort of paired that off a little. He's paired that off for these strands, but yes, it's. I mean, there's a lot going on in it.
Yeah. So personally, I mean, although I liked all of them, they all worked really well individually, and you know, they're kind of interconnected. And I quite like you were saying, I quite enjoyed the Shenzhou and the Enterprise and their respective captains being in conflict with one another.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
I thought that was really interesting. But, you know, the way that Pike's been sent to, you know, destroy the Juggernaut, this, I think it is some kind of machine. Am I right? Thinking it's not living as such.
No, it's an advanced ship. It's automated.
Yeah,
because it's fulfilling a program.
That's right. Yes. So, Pike's been sent to destroy this ship, no matter what the cost, to stop it escaping Cersei 3 and destroying even more planets. As where Georgiou is a bit more. She's not towing the line necessarily. She's trying to find an alternative to just, you know, destroying Cersei 3, destroying the colonists. Is there a way she can destroy the Juggernaut and save the planet? And that brings her to, like, loggerheads with Admiral Anderson, Captain Pike, the Enterprise. And there's a brilliant moment where the Shenzhou places itself in the firing line of the Enterprise. And it's like, I can see it in my head. I want to see that on screen.
I know my impression of Georgiou from her first two episodes and from this book is you can kind of picture her giving that speech that Picard does in Insurrection. It's like, how many people, Admiral, does it take before it's wrong?
Yeah. You know,
and arguing that point, that moral thing, because I think she's that sort of a captain.
Yes.
She's very much I can see that Picard would probably be like looking through Starfleet history texts and really sort of picking her out as someone to emulate and respect.
Yeah. She's very much. She's loyal and she follows orders, but you know, if she doesn't agree, she's willing to take a risk and stick her head out and say, no, this isn't right.
Yes, she's got that strong sense of morality that will let her turn around and question those orders when need be.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that's awesome.
So, are there any of those plots, those strands of the plot that you enjoyed more than the others, or one that stood out for you, or one that you didn't like?
I enjoyed Saru in all aspects. I liked his attitude towards Burnham, his jealousy, and there's quite a good bit near the beginning where he's sort of having a bit of an internal monologue about his relationship with the crew. And everything, and sort of fitting in with them as the only Kelpian in Starfleet and stuff, which is very fascinating. And I felt fitted, and still does fit, with everything we've seen of Saru. And Saru's massively become one of my favourite characters, so it's very good to see more of him. I enjoyed the Burnham-Spock plot for the Burnham-Spock interactions. I kind of felt that the task they were doing, of sort of having to break through these puzzles, was a bit like they were having to play a video game or something.
Yeah.
And I kind of felt that these challenges could have been a little bit more interesting. But I think possibly it was a little more than a plot device to have them spend an extended amount of time together.
Yeah.
And it was less about how they solved the problems and more about they have a little adversarial thing about their intellectual abilities, and this sort of brings out a lot more of the stuff, the talk about their relationship situation, which is, I think that's the meat of their story. And so maybe it feels like a little bit of a computer game type past these challenges, because it doesn't need to be that important, because that's not the story. The story is these two characters having this chance to sort of really talk it out for a bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In terms, when I think about the Georgiou Pike situation, I love the Georgiou a bit. I'm totally on board with her and her attitude and her actions. I don't get behind the characterization of Pike, though.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah.
It doesn't quite sit right with me. I feel that Pike would not have just been like, okay, that sounds like a reasonable thing. I'll blow the colony to hell if that's the situation. That's the orders. That's what I'll do.
Yeah, he rolled over a bit too quickly.
Yeah, and I know that when you look at it from a canon point of view, we've not had a lot of Pike to work from. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of having to extrapolate from, essentially from one episode. But at no point throughout the Cage did he strike me that he would have just accepted those sort of orders.
Yeah.
Or that he would have taken up a stance against Giorgio when she questioned them like that.
Yeah.
So
I'm pretty sure when we discussed it on Twitter with as part of the Trek Book Club, I'm sure I remember seeing some people echo that they didn't find it. Well, one, they didn't find his character that compelling, and two, they didn't think necessarily that he would quite so blindly follow Admiral Anderson's orders. But yeah, it's interesting that, yeah, I agree with that, definitely.
Yeah, I think that's possibly the bit that sort of took me out of it a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. So what did you think of Cersa III, the colony, the Federation colony, and its governor Clover? What did you make of her?
Again, this was possibly the weakest element of the story for me. Obviously, they were building to this sort of reveal, but the ultimate reveal I didn't find particularly fascinating. It was a bit like, oh, so they basically skipped a bit of red tape. And it was, I think in comparison to the massive juggernaut and everything, that was kind of a little bit of a...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it just seemed a little bit of a petty thing for them to concern. And the ultimate reveal of it was about, oh, okay. So...
It does get kind of dwarfed by the juggernaut, the Enterprise, the Shenzhou.
Yeah.
This side problem going on, like a nuisance.
Yeah, I just didn't sort of get into it in the main part of the story. It didn't really seem to really go anywhere worthwhile overall. I mean, maybe I'm missing something, but
I mean, there were bits that I liked. I like the fact that she's quite this character, the governor, is quite she's quite fiery, quite strong-willed. She's not afraid to stand up to two starship captains. Mm. And the battle of wits that she has with Georgiou is quite funny. And I took a note down of one of the conversations they have when I think the Shenzhou arrives and they Giorgio and Clover have this interaction. And Giorgio has this brilliant put down to her, and she says to Clover, "I don't know where you received your legal education, but it seems to me you might have skipped a few chapters pertaining to Federation colonial law. First, because your local law enforcement authorities have to be considered as possibly corrupted by the same scandal as your administration. Your colony's right to police its own offences is liable to immediate suspension at the discretion of the ranking Federation authority in this sector, which, unfortunately for you, is me." I thought that was quite quite cool. There was this little battle between them. So I thought that was quite interesting. And there was some scenes where, you know, Clover was, you know, trying to protect her people, trying to protect her planet. You know, these things that are going on around them, the two starships, you know, saying that they're essentially going to destroy their world, the juggernaut that's, you know, and its drones attacking the colony.
Yeah.
So she's got a lot to deal with, this poor woman. Granted, her government perhaps are a little corrupt, and that there is some questionable things that she does. Like at one point, the Shenzhou sends down a medical team to assist them, and Clover and her staff take the medical team hostage, which you think is a bit harsh when they've been sent down there to help them, and then they use them as hostages. But in a way, I kind of, even though it's quite bad that she's done that, it also takes balls to, you know, she's quite witty, quite clever and cunning in that, you know, she'll do whatever it takes to protect her colony. There's quite a lot of strong female figures in this: Burnham, Giorgio, Clover. I quite liked her. I mean, yeah, she's not the most exciting character we've ever seen, and she is kind of like a side character, and her storyline is a bit of a side storyline as well. But it was kind of interesting.
I did like how it intersect nicely with the is it the dentist?
Yeah,
on the Shenzhou as well. Who've been pushing for a landing party duty. Yeah, and then he ends up getting taken hostage. So I was like, yeah, it has very little impact on the overall story, but it was quite a fun little character thing that was following this guy. So I did like that.
So I think we see some of the Shenzhou characters that we briefly saw or didn't get to see, like Dr. Nambu, is it?
Yeah.
I think he's in this briefly. I don't know if we actually got to see him on Discovery. On the episodes of
I don't think we saw any medical stuff on the Shenzhou, did we?
No, I think we heard his name being mentioned, but we didn't actually see him.
Yeah. I did find it interesting. I read a thing with David Mack the other day that he came up with some of the name and backstory for some of the other characters scattered around, which was then utilised in the show. Like Detmer, I think, he came up with a bit for her, which they then followed up on the show.
Yeah, I didn't realise that.
Which is kind of cool. Yeah. No, I'd assumed there'd been a sort of more detailed character Bible available, but yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I liked there was one bit in the story where they just casually explained the difference between the uniforms in Discovery and TOS. That was really cool. Because we just assumed that, you know, it's just happened. We've got to deal with it. There's no explanation. But they do... David Mack tries to has this very brief bit where he explains the difference, and I think they say that the new Constitution class starships, their crews have this new style uniforms. It's gradually being rolled out to Starfleet, but at the moment it's just in these, you know, really new advanced starships. That's quite cool.
That follows into the thing that why there's the unique unique symbol on the uniforms for the that we saw through TOS, but now we've all got the standard Starfleet arrowhead.
Yes. Yeah.
That would be a follow on to the special provision for Constitution class as the big thing in the fleet, these ships. So they get their own special uniform. Each one gets its own mission patch. But Enterprise keeps the Starfleet standard because she's the flagship. So that kind of makes all sense. And I quite like that. Yeah. So whether it'll ever get followed up and we'll actually see a Constitution class in Discovery, I don't know.
Fingers crossed.
Absolutely. I'm hopeful.
But I wonder whether it'll be, I assume it'd be more like the J.J. Abrams Kelvin timeline ships.
Well, we saw that graphic of the Defiant, and that was very, very, very close to the TOS layout.
Oh, really? I must have completely missed that. I need to go back and check.
Yeah, there was some small modifications, but that has since been confirmed on Twitter by one of the producers that those were modifications done in the Mirror Universe. So it's had a couple of refits. It essentially amount to some cut-out sections on the saucer, and there's a break in the nacelle pylons where they look like they've added some cannons in. So
it's not out of the realms of possibility that it would be more TOS style.
Yeah, I think. Well, it's a very interesting one because they risk a lot of fan wrath coming down on them if they do change it. But you know, the other end of the thing, you've got to move with the times a bit, haven't you?
Yeah, Discovery's been it's caused some tension, some friction in the fandom. Not for me personally, but it's interesting to see how some people react to it, and in some ways react quite badly to it.
They do. I mean, controversial does not really do it justice, does it? So
no, not at all.
But I mean, for me, from the get go, I was hooked.
Yeah.
You know, so I have no trouble, you know, in my head canon just letting it merge together. Doesn't jar me, doesn't take me out of it. I'm quite happy. I think Discovery's some fantastic stuff. So,
I think so. I'm not saying that these people are wrong, but they probably know a lot more about Star Trek and its history than I do. But it seems to be the people that are a lot more focused on canon that they can't get past things that don't fit in or aren't, you know, timeline wise correct, or you know, like the Klingons, the way they look, and the aesthetics of the ships. But I can, yeah, yeah, I can, that doesn't bother me really at all.
No, I could, I quite like that throughout this book, I had no trouble with the mental images in my head that they could have a hologram of Admiral Anderson talking to Pike on the bridge of the Enterprise. I had no trouble picturing.
Yeah, that's exactly how I imagined it.
I could picture that, no trouble. And likewise, I could picture a hologram of Pike on the Shanzo Bridge.
Yes.
No problem. So, you know,
yeah.
It's not that, I don't find it that out of what we're used to. So, but, you know, that may be, it's just that, I'm not going to say that I'm definitely right. I'm just, I can work around it and I'm enjoying it. Cool. So that's me.
So we had the, about the story, we had the dilemma of what to do, Juggernaut on Cersa 3 and its drones. So you had, you know, basically they had a limited time to destroy the Juggernaut. But in doing so, you know, they're going to have to destroy the planet and all its inhabitants. Which is what they've been ordered to do, which is what Georgiou and Pike have been ordered to do. But Georgiou has a big problem with this. And in fact, the crew of the Shenzhou have a problem with it as well. They want to try and find an alternative. And this is what brings them into conflict with the Enterprise. So I quite like that initial conflict. And then we get the scenes where the Enterprise and the Shenzhou are battling together to fight this the Juggernaut. I could picture those scenes in my head of there's a bit where the Enterprise fires and it opens up this, I think they almost describe it like a wound or like some sort of gaping wound on the Juggernaut, and then the Shenzhou fires into this like vulnerable spot, and there's a bit where, and it immediately made me think of the scene in The Undiscovered Country where the Enterprise and the Excelsior battling Chang's bird of prey, where in this book, Georgiou, when she sees this part of the Juggernaut's been exposed, she says, "Target that and fire." And it literally did make me think of that scene in The Undiscovered Country. I really liked that. Reminded me of Sulu and, you know, target that explosion and fire.
Yeah. So I think that's the second time Georgiou's had a little harken back thing. Is it in Vulcan Hello when all the Klingon ships arrive? And she does that, says that contact Starfleet command, tell them we've engaged the Klingons, which always made me think of Best of Both Worlds when Picard says, contact Starfleet command, tell them we've engaged the Borg. So I think in the trailer that they actually had that line, and I thought of the Borg, Best of Both Worlds, straight away then.
And we get at the beginning of this book, I think you mentioned in the summary, we get Georgiou essentially choosing Burnham as her new acting first officer over Saru.
Yes.
I always want to say Saru. Saru. I think that's, I'm pronouncing it right. I'm sure someone's going to correct me. Help me off and correct me.
I think so, yeah, Saru.
Yeah, and we get, I really feel for Saru. We have a scene where Georgiou explains to him, you know, and he's saying, you know, but I've got double the amount of experience. I've served longer in Starfleet. You know, I'm, you know, my fitness record is exemplary. You know, I'm on the command track and I've been in it longer. And there's all these reasons why he should be promoted over her. And it's really painful to watch Georgiou say, well, yeah, but, you know, she has these moments of greatness. And she's more of a natural born leader. And it's interesting to see that in the TV show where I can't remember which episode it is, but in the first chapter, we see Saru unsure of himself, where he looks up, he's trying to get inspiration from previous, you know, decorated captains. And yes, that's it. And he's looking up the characteristics of a good captain. So he desperately wants to be a great captain. And then again, spoiler alert, going all the way forward to where we are now on the TV show. So the last episode was, I can't remember the name of it.
What's Past Prologue?
That's it. Thank you. where Saru is like amazing. He really steps up to the.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. He's an amazing leader.
Yeah, it's straight away after that episode. I was like, just everyone think back to Choose Your Pain, where he was unsure of himself and he had to look up that list and get the computer to assess him. So that's brilliant.
He really steps up his game. There's so many good scenes in that episode where,
yeah,
you know, I'm going a bit away from the book, but where he
I think this is the joys of this as a prequel, yes, prologue, yeah, thing, because it does. Mac has tied it into these episodes so very well.
Yeah, he really has.
And I think there's another early episode where Saru goes on a little bit of a rant to Burnham that you've taken everything from me. You took my chance on the Shenzhou. Yeah. You took my captain away. It's like,
yeah,
this stems from this. It stems from this, doesn't it? So it's one of the delights of how well this ties in.
Yeah, yeah, he really has tied it in very, very well. I've really enjoyed it, this book. David Mack's clearly a really great author. I mean, he knows his Star Trek.
Oh, absolutely. I've enjoyed his stuff immensely. I mean, he's had some cracking books over the last few years in Star Trek, so it's definitely one of the authors always worth picking up, I think.
I quite liked the drones that come out of the Juggernaut. I thought they were really cool. And I like the way that, I think I'm remembering correctly, when this Juggernaut releases these drones, and each time it releases one, they're getting stronger and smarter and more dangerous. I really like that. That almost like they're learning from what's happening, and they're getting quicker, more agile.
Yes. It builds the tension up very nicely, because, you know, each time they come out, that time that they're getting closer to the bit where they can't be beaten.
Definitely, yeah.
And that's kind of, puts another ticking clock on it in a way, doesn't it? Which is good.
Was there anything else plot-wise that you can think of before maybe moving on to characters? I mean, I know we have talked about characters, but...
I don't know. I think we've covered all my thoughts on it. Yeah, highlights and as I say, there's a couple of lowlights, some story bits that I didn't really gel with, but none of them just sort of ruined the book for me yet by any stretch.
Yeah. So. I did one last thing about plot-wise. I like the ending of the book, where the last line where Georgiou, I think, officially promotes Burnham, and Burnham just says, this is going to drive Saru insane. I like the last few words and the rivalry between them, which is, you know, where we see that from the very first few episodes of Discovery. I quite like that. It's quite fun.
Yeah.
So character-wise, is there anyone that... Yeah. I think you said Saru you quite enjoyed in this book?
Yeah. I think I probably have inadvertently already covered most of my character bits, because we discussed Spock and Burnham. The Saru-Burnham rivalry. Georgiou, we talked about in relation, and obviously the big letdown from a character point of view for me was Pike. So I didn't feel he was really true to what I perceived Pike's character to be. But I do acknowledge we are really only going from one episode, so it's kind of a little bit of leeway room, I guess.
Yeah. So what did you... I quite like the Saru and Una working together. I liked, and it hit Saru's admiration for her.
Yes,
almost like a little glimmers of possible romance.
Well, you know, they were hidden off quite well, weren't they? Yeah, but
there's a line where he describes her. He says she's got a sardonic wit and a born realist. Saru swooned. He'd have made a fine Kelpian. I like her.
Oh, you like that you see wound.
Yeah, I like their interactions. It's quite nice to see, you know, and there was this really touching moment where he says to her, like, I've really enjoyed making your acquaintance, and explains that because he's found it so difficult bonding with the crew, and like you said, he's been a Kelpian in Starfleet. He finds it really hard to relate to everyone, so it's nice that he's finally met this person that he respects. Not that he doesn't respect and admire Georgiou and Burnham, but, you know, he feels a bit more of an affinity with.
Yes, yeah. So, yeah, it was good. It was nice to see, actually, that Saru had a story beyond just being you know, upset that he was passed over for the first officer position.
Yeah, yeah.
Gave him something else to do. And, you know, I say it's always good to see Saru. He's definitely one of the standout characters.
I think we find there's a bit where Saru explains a bit more about his species and why they're a prey species. And I think they mention, I did write it down, but I've lost the bit where where I'd written it down. They, I think they name the predators on his planet. I think is it Trass or Tarrasque or something like that. I think that's who they are. He mentions something about them, something about being hunted. So that was quite cool. And yeah, and there's a scene, the scene where he uses the transporter and transports down to, he transports down to Sector 3, and it's almost like a monologue. We're internal monologue. We're hearing him explain that when he's in the transporter, he feels, you know, hidden and safe, and then when he reappears, he feels exposed and vulnerable. So you get this idea of really how ingrained that it is for Saru, that, you know, he it sounds like he's afraid almost all of the time, and he's doing his not in a cowardly way, but he's being really brave, and, you know, just especially being in Starfleet, you know, that's he's putting himself in a job where he's in danger quite a lot. So it must be really hard for him to do his job, and, you know, just to battle against his almost natural instincts of being afraid and wanting to hide and be safe.
Yeah, it is quite interesting. And so it's something I think we see explored in that episode with the encounter of the Parvo a little bit as well, isn't it? It sort of finds a little bit of peace around that. But,
The scene where they transport him back, and he's like, you know, that's the one time he's never felt frightened, and they again burn him, took that away from him.
Any other thoughts on characters?
Let's see here. We talked about Saru. We've talked about Spock and Burnham. We see a little bit more of, I know he's a side character, Admiral Anderson in this book. Because we only really saw him in Battle for the Binary Star? Yeah, I think Europa was destroyed by the sarcophagus ship. So we see a bit more of him in this, and he issues the orders to destroy the Juggernaut no matter what, and Georgiou disobeys.
Yeah, he turns up, saves the Shenzhou, and then is pretty quickly taken out of it.
Yeah, good on that. So we see a little bit more of him. But yeah, I think that's, we've covered pretty much all the characters, unless there's anything else you can think of.
No, I mean, I think I inadvertently covered most of them when we were supposed to be just talking about plot. So
covered it all in one.
Yeah.
So, shall we move on to questions and comments from people that were taking part in Trek Book Club on Twitter when we discussed Desperate Hours?
Absolutely.
Captain, we're receiving 285,000 hails.
So, did you have any standout? I mean, obviously, there was hundreds of people comments.
There was a lot
of people. So, thank you everyone who took part. Whether you liked something, or you tweeted something, made a comment, posed a question, they were all fantastic. So, thank you so much for joining in. Were there any highlights for you? Any ones you've picked out that stood out for you?
Yeah, there's a couple here. And it's going to sound a bit like I'm picking ones that are just sort of going to back up my theories, but. Bad Hate at Tyrannicus said, I thought it was great. It's exactly the sort of thing I would expect from Kirk or Picard when we talked about Georgiou.
That's so funny. That's one I was going to pick out as well. It's a good,
Yes. Yeah, exactly. When Georgiou puts the Shenzhou in the firing line. So, and he also said regarding Saru and Number One, Commander Una, Saru definitely had a crush on her, and it was adorable.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And I want that. I want that to be true.
Absolutely, yes.
A little love story.
Yeah, it would have been cool. But, is there any others?
Let's have a look here. So, I think I posed a question What do you make of the Shenzhou putting itself in the firing line of the Enterprise and Georgiou disobeying Anderson's orders? And following on from what you said about Tyrannicus saying that he thought it was very much the sort of thing Kirk or Picard would do, another Trek bookler, Boothby Clara, maybe a benefit of relating to the Starfleet headquarters groundskeeper, but so she said, justified, they have to explore and exhaust all other options before mass murder, and Pike's orders didn't do this. So that was quite, she's thinking that Georgiou's absolutely justified in putting the Shenzhou in the firing line.
Absolutely, she's right.
Yeah, so I like that comment. What else have we got here? Oh yeah, so Drew, who was at T23TY, said the whole Shenzhou Enterprise battling together, fantastic stuff. If only to see it on screen, which I completely agree with. That would be awesome to see that on screen.
So, that would have been awesome.
Someone needs to make a fan film of that. Get clips of the Enterprise, get clips of the Shenzhou from Battle of the Binary Stars, and make that into a fan film. I do not have the technical expertise to do that. Someone do that.
Yes, that would be awesome.
Any other comments? Yep.
I think there was one from Adam. I think it's Uno. I cannot understand Pike's characterization in the book. It was one of the few disappointing parts for me.
Ah.
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you on that one.
Yeah, I was pretty sure there were some people that echoed what you said about Pike, so that's interesting. So I asked, is Georgiou a good captain? And at Nicola Pleasance said that she said she pissed me off. She pissed me off in the book. Pike had orders to carry out from Starfleet, and she set on Pike for doing his job. Why was she not reprimanded? So quite the reverse of this. Nicola was much more like, you know, Pike's just doing his job. So, and Georgiou's like completely going against him and making his life really difficult. And in fairness, although I disagree, I agree with that, what Georgiou did, it is interesting, you know, why wasn't she reprimanded? Or perhaps she will be and we just don't see it. We haven't seen it yet. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's that sort of like, well, everything worked out okay in the end. So we imagine the admirals just sort of forget about it kind of thing, which happens in quite a lot of situations, I think.
Yeah, that's tempting. Do I have anything else? I was going to say, at Gordon Blake 32 commented, new crews, new stories, always great. Looking forward to learning backstory of the Disco crew, which I think we said as well, that this is really great to find out what happened to the Shenzhou, possibly even the Discovery at some point down the line. What's happened with those before we meet them on the TV show?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And have you got any more?
There was loads. There's always loads in there. But I just picked out a few there. But yeah.
Yeah. I've got one more and then I'll stop. At 917JD, I replied to a question that I'd put, did you like the villains of the story, the Juggernaut, drones, and Governor Clover? Do you consider them villains? So this, at 917JD said about Governor Clover and her staff, at times they seem more victims than villains, unwilling pawns in the mining consortium's duplicity and collateral damage to the Admiral. They went into survival mode, just wanting to keep the status quo, which I think nails it pretty much on the head. That's a good comment. So yeah, some great comments and questions and contributions for people there. So thank you for those.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the most enjoyable days of the month, just to sort of get into all the meat of a good Star Trek book and get all these different views and thoughts on from everyone.
What people come out with are some things that I completely had missed, or I didn't really think of it from that viewpoint. So it's interesting to get other people's opinions.
Yeah, absolutely is.
And so moving on to what we try to do each time is when we're doing the discussion on Twitter, once we read the book, I put out a poll to rate the book.
Oh, yes, of course.
Which I know is hard because, you know, some people have different opinions and, you know, it's hard to rate, you know, there's lots going on in this book, so it might be hard to rate it overall, but nevertheless, I asked people to do that. So I asked people to rate Discovery Desperate Hours, and we had 27 people voted, and the final result was 63% of the people that voted rate Discovery Desperate Hours as, they give it an A.
Fantastic.
So yeah, fairly overwhelmingly, top marks for Desperate Hours. 33% rated it as B, 4% as C. So yeah, it's fairly resounding A grade for Desperate Hours. So it's clearly very popular with the fans.
Yeah, brilliant. Oh, that's good. I mean, I definitely got the impression on that one everyone had really had a good time reading that book.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so it's very good. Yeah. And I know I certainly did. It was fantastic. And we're actually just days away now from the next book in the Discovery series.
Yes. I can't remember the name of it off of the top of my head.
I can't. I know it does involve Giorgio and Lorca.
I'm sure it's it's fairly similar, I think, the title. It's not too far away from Desperate Hours.
Drastic Measures.
Drastic Measures, there you go. Desperate Hours, Drastic Measures. It's all, yeah, very similar. It's,
I love it because it harks back to a mentioned event from the original series that Kirk, as a child, was a witness to a massacre on a planet called Tarsus 4, I think, committed by Kodos the Executioner. And there's an episode in the original series where Kirk, as a captain, comes face-to-face with Kodos under a new identity.
Right.
But this is going to be from Giorgio and Lorca dealing with the massacre as they arrive, and that's going to be quite good. Yes, and we assume now that would be the Prime Universe original Lorca, who we never have actually seen.
Who's sort of the Prime Lorca that's in the next book?
Yes, yeah, because it's so far back. I'm assuming it's before the Miri Lorca took his place.
Right, cool. Yeah. Oh, okay.
But of course, recent revelations, we've never even met the Prime Lorca.
Ah, so we'll be introduced to Prime Lorca before if he still exists on the TV series, before we see him on TV. That's be quite interesting.
Yes. Yeah.
Excellent. I'm sure that'll be one for a future Trek Book Club at some point in the not too distant future.
I was hoping so. Yeah. It'd be a good one. But before that, we've got more podcasts to do on some of our book clubs.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So we've got next time we'll be discussing our Trek Book Club selection for that we discussed in November 2017. And that, I can't remember, did we reveal what we were talking about this time in our last episode? I think we did.
Yeah, I think we did. Yeah.
I think we did. I'm pretty sure we did, yes.
Yes, we definitely did, because that's the point where Tilly had to ask, is that a book?
That's right. So next time we'll be discussing November's Trek Book Club Twitter discussion selection, which was Star Trek Spock's World by Diane Duane.
Wow, is that a book?
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, again, we had some great discussions on that.
Yeah, so that should be fun next time. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, thinking about where people can find us. So if you're interested in taking part in Trek Book Club, remember you can follow us on Twitter at Trek Book Club, and you can take part in the discussions we have on Twitter every month about a different Star Trek book. So yeah, look up Trek Book Club. You'll see there's a link on the profile page, which explains what Trek Book Club does and what it's about. And then usually on the pinned tweet at the top is what we're reading for that month, and when we're meeting to discuss it on Twitter, what day we're meeting to discuss it on Twitter, which is usually the last Saturday of the month, usually. So, yeah, do come and join in if you're interested. And it's not just for people that have read lots and lots of books, because I've not read a huge amount myself. So it's newbies and more the veterans among you.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and everyone's welcome. It's always a great discussion.
Yeah, and yeah, you can individually. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Trekkie Rob. And where can people find you, Rick?
I am on Twitter at TrekFanRick, and I'm also doing the Twitter account for my other podcast, 10 Backward, which is at 10 Backward.
Brilliant! Definitely check that out.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, brilliant. I think that wraps up Desperate Hours.
It does indeed. So, but before we go, is there anything, any Star Trek, are there any other Star Trek podcasts or YouTube channels, episodes that you've watched recently?
I've recently really got into Earl Grey on the Trek FM network, which I'm really enjoying hugely. Yeah, and as always, Trek Ranks is very much worth a listen.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
I would recommend that even if me and Rob hadn't previously been guests on it, I think.
You can watch the episodes that we're not on as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's loads out there, so it's always worth just trying everything. I'm sure that you'll definitely find something you like.
Yeah, yeah. No, so you took part fairly recently in one of the Trek Ranks episodes.
Yeah.
What was your episode on? What was the theme, the topic of your...
The top five Cisco moments.
Yeah, that sounds really good.
Yeah, that's good fun. I think you were on just like the month, just the episode right before mine, weren't you?
Yes, I was. Yeah, that's right. I was on, yeah, a few weeks before you. And my episode was... the topic was top five two-part episodes.
Yes,
that was it. Yeah. And thinking of other Trek podcasts or YouTube channels, I was lucky enough to take part or to be invited to take part in some other group chats about Star Trek. So if anyone's seen at Starfleet Boys YouTube channel, he has some really great discussions about, so he breaks down and discusses discovery episodes. So that was really fun.
Yes, I started watching when I saw you saying that you'd been on one. Yeah, so I started wanting to check that out.
Yeah.
It's good fun.
So I was chatting about the episode Vaulting Ambitions. So that was with Starfleet Boy, Trek on the Tube, another great YouTube channel, definitely check that out, and Trekkerprise, which I've plugged before, definitely check him out.
Yes.
And another YouTuber,
very good.
Pet Wolfsky. They're all great, have great Trek content, so check all those out. So yeah, I discussed the Discovery episode, and I was lucky enough to be invited back to discuss, I think he's doing a, Starfleet Boy's doing a TNG rewatch, so he's going through and commenting on each of the episodes. So I was invited to discuss TNG Season 4, Episode 14, Clues, which I'd completely forgotten about. It's quite an interesting episode. So, yeah, go and check that out. And I also listened to one of my favourite Trek FM podcasts is To the Journey, which is the Star Trek Voyager podcast. And
awesome. Yeah.
Quite a sad one because one of the hosts is leaving. So it was a great episode. It was bittersweet, but they were discussing, you know, why Voyager means so much to them and important parts in Voyager went into them, and it was a really good episode. So definitely go and check that out if you can. So yeah, so I suppose unless there's anything else you wanted to say, I guess we will see everyone next time to discuss Spock's World.
We will indeed. Brilliant. Thank you very much for listening.
Yeah, thanks guys.
Then I'm going to my cabin, I'm going to put my feet up, I'm going to turn on my personal relaxation light, and I'm going to lose myself in the pages of some old novel.